Podcasting for the Digital Photographer.
Hi, this is Kelvin from Hong Kong, and you're listening to Tips from the Top Floor.
This is Tips from the Top Floor. And here's your host, Chris Marquardt.
All right, and this is the second out of four interviews in succession. I've pre-recorded these interviews during the month of August 2005 in order to have something interesting on the show for my listeners during the month of September, which I will actually spend on vacation, far away from the daily treadmill. Unfortunately, me being away also means that I won't be able to answer your emails or moderate all the comments on the website, so please hang in there. I'll be back in October. Until then, you can expect one longer show a week instead of the usual three shorter ones. While you're downloading this show, I'll be spending time in southern Sweden, close to Vimmerby, which was the hometown of Astrid Lindgren, who wrote wonderful children's stories such as Pippi Longstocking. And in today's show, I'll be chatting about turning your photography hobby into a profession with Franklin McMahon of the Media Artist Secrets podcast, which you can find at mediaartist.com. Hey, Frank. Thank you for being back on the show.
Hey, Chris.
How's it going with you?
You know, I can't complain. I'm having a great day.
Good. actually, I think since we last talked on the show, there must have been a whole lot of new listeners joining in, so people will probably not know who you are and what you do. So why don't you just introduce yourself and let people know?
Well, my name's Franklin McMahon. I'm a photographer and a media artist, visual artist. My background's in broadcast television, writing and directing independent film, and moved into photography. I did it creatively for a while, but launched it as a business about 4 years, almost 4 years ago. And I do a podcast called Media Artist Secrets, mediaartist.com, and it's about the business of being creative. And it's a fun show. Scott Fletcher, you know, gets us rolling every episode with his luminous voice. So because of Scott, I think Scott getting people riled up and motivated starts the show off good.
Well, so. It definitely worked for my show, so why shouldn't it work for yours?
He's like a gold mine, that guy. Whatever he touches turns to gold. Look at our show. So.
And if you need a speaker for an announcer for your own podcast, check out Scott Fletcher. He's great.
Yeah, we should get a commission on that, though. Like, if we recommend him to another show, we should get a cut, don't you think?
Very good idea.
I'll draw up some contracts.
Okay, let's see. Actually, this show is a bit outside the usual shows, as this is not. I don't want to make this a formal interview of any sort. I'd like to have this bit more of an informal chat. Well, we haven't prepared, so
you can't get much more informal than that.
That's right. We just decided a few minutes ago, let's talk and record and see if we can use it for a show. And well, sounds fun. There's a good vibe in the air, right?
We could merge the two shows and talk about the business of photography. If we're looking for topics, which that's it seems right. Like we are.
Well, I do have a whole list of photography topics that I didn't cover on the show yet, but that's a totally different topic. No, I think the business of photography. Hey, actually, you're the right guy to talk about that. So, yeah, I think that's a very good idea. I mean, I just started my own business around media productions that includes photography. Some 3 years ago, and that was and still is a very interesting times, and a lot of things to learn and dig out old stuff and relearn things and so on. So yeah, that's probably a very interesting topic, and I figure that there are some listeners out there who want to know what it takes to turn the hobby of photography into a job or into a known business.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that it's kind of a leap. I wouldn't say it's a natural progression. It's something that you really have to think about and decide and move into. Anytime you leave a hobby and go with a career. It's a parting of sorts. I mean, it's still, you know, the hobby is still there, but it turns into something quite different. It could be good or bad. It could be bad because you may get so wrapped up in a business that you forget the purity of the actual hobby that you loved, or you can take your photography to levels you never dreamed of just doing it as a creative hobby. In other words, doing it as a business kind of really forces you into fast forward mode with clients demanding things and wanting different shoots and saying, you know, calling you up and saying, hey, can you do this? Can you photograph bridges? And you're like, I've never even done a bridge. I haven't done architecture. But you say, yes, sir, I'll be there, and I'll, what time? And then you end up doing this stuff and learning so much. I find that the way I've mastered photography, or trying to master photography, is when I started as a business, then I really started developing a style. Then it just hugely took off, as opposed to doing it creatively, which I would do in my free time and do it for fun. But there was nothing really pressing me and forcing me to be better and to challenge myself as much as starting as a business.
So you mean doing it as a business actually in some instances forces you to focus, right?
Yeah, I mean, one classic example I use is there was a hotel that was right around the corner from me that did like $7 million worth of renovations, and they called me up and they wanted me to do rooms and the architecture and outside the building, and they wanted me to show the space of the ballroom and all this other stuff. And a lot of it had to do with natural lighting, and because it was, you know, very hard to light. Like when I'm photographing a subject, it's fairly easy to light, but if you go into a big hotel room or a big ballroom, sometimes you have to use natural light. So my instinct was to say, well, I'm not really an architectural photography person, but instead I said, yeah, I can do that, and didn't know what I was getting into quite yet, but learned an incredible amount, a lot of it through trial and error, transparent to the client, thankfully. The first thing I did was get some new lenses and some wide-angle lenses and some lenses that were a bit brighter so I could use natural light. And I don't know, it was just such a huge learning experience, and it really forced me into doing that. And now that's part of my business, doing architecture and buildings and stuff like that. And there's really excellent, you know, revenue to be generated from that. And it just took being forced into it by a client to get me rolling.
And that's what I've seen in many things. I mean, I don't exclusively do photography. I do CD productions. I record things. And one day I was asked to record a theater production, to do the sound of a DVD production for a theater play. Mm. And that was a first for me. And I basically did the same. I said, oh, yes, I can do it. And in the back of my mind, I thought, never done that before. How am I going to approach that? But then I spent a lot of time to prepare and really learn about the subject up front, and then going there, I was able to do it, maybe not perfectly, but in this instance, good enough for the customer. He loved what I did, and I'm actually still working with that customer. And yeah, the whole thing forced me to learn a whole lot in a very short time, and it's a real good feeling. I found it's a real good feeling to step out of that experience and just realize that you extended your portfolio by being able to do something with more confidence than you were before.
Yeah, it's kind of being pushed into, you know, a new thing, and it kind of, you know, and a lot of it you can research if there's a new type of photography that a client wants. You know, I might read up on techniques or what the best equipment is to use, and you know, experiment, do like experiments. Before that shoot, I did some experiments just at my place in my studio, just using natural light and using a wide angle lens to get the whole room. And, you know, it was just very insightful. And I probably wouldn't have done all that experimentation just on my own. So it was good to be pushed into it.
Yeah, back on show number 45, where I did an interview about press photography with Stephen George, one of the things, in order to prepare for a job, he pointed out that I think was quite valuable: go to those To those sites where people can purchase photography, such as corbis.com, for example, corbis.com, and just check out how other photographers were taking pictures of the subject that you are supposed to take pictures of, and then this way get an idea what they might have done to get to that result. And yeah, just use the web to prepare. And there's so many pictures out there that can give you a lot of good inputs. And if you are at a certain level of experience, you will, just by looking at pictures, you will get an idea how people went about getting to that result.
Yeah, it's, you could call it like professional choices. You know, people, you know, professionals make professional choices. When they're shooting, you know, they have to do it a certain way, and they do it in a way that looks very professional. And you might be doing it a completely different way. And if you start to look at a lot of professional photography, or not even professional, but photography that you really look up to, you look at someone's work and you're like, wow, that is something, you know, I want to be there at some point. I want to achieve that look. You start to see themes, and you start to see how they're seeing their subjects. And then you start to mimic it. You start to, you know, recreate it and do very similar shots. And sometimes it's unlearning something. If you've been shooting a certain way, you might have to shift and, you know, shoot a totally different way. I always tell people to, you know, get rid of the tripod and, you know, tilt it and, you know, just have fun with composition. You know, you've done shows on composition and, you know, just do something that's out of the norm to start to develop that style and make it look different.
And I think one of the things that I'd like to point out here is, I personally think there's nothing wrong with mimicking and copying the style of other photographers. That's a very good way to learn new techniques, and then in the end get to a point where you modify them and in your own way, and where you start to develop your own style. But getting there, I think, through copying other style is perfectly fine.
Well, the big thing, this was several years ago, but the turning point for me was I saw this picture of a rock and roll singer. I forget what band it was, and it was just a straight-on shot, but the sides of his head were shaded, like more shadowy, and the center of his face was very bright. And I was like, that's pretty cool, because whenever I light something, I lit it pretty well. I lit it, you know, with two lights on each side and a backlight, so it was, you know, pretty well lit. And I looked at that picture, I was like, it almost seems like they just used one light straight on, and ended up mimicking that in the shoot I was doing the very next day with this model. And they just looked so much more dramatic, just shutting one light off and moving the light. Actually, I had the light pretty much right under me. It was parallel, it was in between myself and the subject, down a little so I could shoot over the light. And it was just a very, very dramatic shot. And it was dramatic because I had never shot like that before. And suddenly I just learned a little bit more about lighting and playing with light and using just one light as opposed to two, which I had been. So that was a mimic. That's something I definitely tried to copy and have applied it, you know, many, many times since.
Yeah, I recently tried to mimic something. I took how do you call those things that you sometimes see in train stations where you can sit in and toss a few coins in or a dollar and then get some pictures out, some passport pictures and stuff.
Oh, yeah, the booths with the curtains.
These photo booths. And I used one of those just for fun. I was out and about with my girlfriend and we had fun and we sat in that and took those four pictures you get out on a paper strip. And the way those looked was so amazing. There was a certain quality of the color being slightly off to the with a greenish tint, and they were slightly to the on the overexposed side, but just a tad. And then there was some sort of a trashy quality to those pictures, and I spent a few hours trying to recreate that effect during post-processing. Mm. And I was tossing layers upon layers and trying different blending modes and things to finally get to kind of at least mimic that effect. So it doesn't necessarily have to be another photographer. It can also be anything you see.
Yeah, I think that we try to make things so perfect. A lot of photographers, especially if they're just starting out in their business, or you know, they do portraits and they want to make it look so well lit and so perfect and so together. And I love especially point and shoot cameras, because they're usually much faster lenses, and I like. And we've talked about this before, but you know, just changing the exposure so there's a slight blur, so it's open just a little bit long, and maybe switching to black and white mode, but just doing that stuff that, you know, is not professional, quote unquote, professional looking. But you know, you'll see a lot of you know, guest ads and things like that, where it's just, you know, it's more moody and atmospheric, and that's how you develop your style. And I think a lot of photographers try so hard to do really nice, well-lit portraits. They look so well-lit and they're nicely framed. But unfortunately, what happens is they now suddenly blend into thousands of other photographers. They have that portrait look. They've achieved it. They've copied it. And now they look like everyone else. And I would just say, kind of backtrack from that a little bit and start to develop your own style, so when people see one of your shots, they know it's you almost. You know, they're like, wow, that looked like one of your shots because I recognize your style. So, you know, and then just mix it up a little bit.
That was actually one of the biggest compliments I ever got. A couple of weeks ago, someone told me when he saw one of my pictures posted to some online gallery type of thing, that he instantly saw that it was me who had taken that picture. Wow.
Oh, wow. That's cool. I actually, I do get that a lot, because I do a lot of print stuff and stuff that goes in, you know, local magazines and stuff and national stuff. And but especially around my area, you know, people will see it and say, I knew that was one of your shots because of that. It had that style. It had that color and energy. And, you know, I think I've worked hard to develop a style, and that's probably the most important thing you can do in photography is develop a style. You may think it's learning all the controls and stuff, but it's actually developing a visual, you know, vision or a visual style.
A visual language, basically.
Oh, yeah. Because if you're speaking a slightly different language, it's very unique and it stands out. If you're, you know, looking like everyone else, it's really, really hard to stand out. And I think that's a lot of photographers, when they get into the business, they try to be like everyone else. And it works for a while, but to really make it, you know, it takes a little bit more than that.
Okay, back to the whole business aspect of it. So when you started your own company, how did you get those first paying customers on board? I'm just looking at how things developed for me, and I when I did this as a hobby, and friends were asking me, and at one point in time, I had to tell them, yes, I'll do it, but I'll charge you for it.
You just said the biggest lesson that I'm going to mention right now is that you start charging, and it sounds simple. It's like, of course, it's a business. You start charging, but a lot of times you don't. You know, when you start a business, you first usually kind of expand out with the people you know, relatives and friends and people like that. And my background in television and stuff, I've known a lot of actors. I still know a ton of actors and talent. And I started doing headshots as one of my services. And everyone came to me and wanted a discount or wanted, you know, something for free or free prints or whatever, because they knew me, and they were like, oh, can you give me a deal? And, you know, I know you're just starting out and I'd like to help you. I think they thought they were helping me by being a subject to helping my business. And the first couple I said, yeah, I can give you a discount. But then I thought it was pretty unfair to other people paying customers that I was giving preference for no real reason except that I happen to know these people. And I just kind of made a decision very black and white to charge people I knew and whatever. And you know, some people, if they couldn't afford me, that's fine. But you really want to build up your value, and people will respect that you're charging. So, but to answer your question, what I did in the beginning, I did some stuff that I got the most mileage out of that wasn't necessarily the highest paying. Like, I would do a lot of local print work. I did covers for this magazine called Face Magazine. That was local, and the money was not that much, but I had total creative control, And I, it was pretty, you know, thousands and thousands of people would see it. So part of the deal I worked out was that my name was on every picture and my domain name, and I also got an ad inside the magazine. So that got me so much mileage. And also a lot of things I did is I created alliances with local clubs because they needed outdoor posters and stuff. So there's some clubs in the city that have huge backlit posters of my shots, kind of like model shots and people dancing and stuff. And part of the deal was also having my domain name right underneath it, you know, in small letters so people could see it when they walk by. So those things were, you know, huge impact. I think if you're going to, you know, work out a deal or make a little bit less, make sure you get a lot of mileage out of it, not the other way around. The problem that a lot of photographers starting out come you know, into is they'll pretty much do everything, and they can get taken advantage of. And you just have to stand your ground and keep your prices set and, you know, do some stuff that's going to give you wide exposure. But also, you know, stick with your packages, raise your rates periodically, because what will happen when you raise your rates, you'll start to weed out people who can't afford you and might not be great clients anyway, and you'll start to move into a whole nother, you know, level of clients who, you know, have some good money to spend.
And getting those first steps and getting the first money out of a business will then allow you to invest back into the business and buy better equipment and do maybe some more advertising for yourself.
Yeah, definitely invest back in and also network. I mean, have your business card. I always tell people, I'm shocked at how many new photographers don't have a simple business card. And it could be you could just get something with your phone number and email and pass it out to everyone, even if they don't. To me, everyone needs photography. That was my one of my mission statements when I started the business. Everyone needs photography. I don't care who it is. I don't care who I'm talking to. Everyone at some point will need a photo of something, a family member. They may need a headshot. They might need their home photographed. They might need their car photographed. All these different ways that people can use a good photographer. So I gave my card out to everyone, and I was surprised, you know, months later, sometimes a year later, someone would say, yeah, you remember we met at that networking function, you gave me your card? And I was like, yeah, I think I remember. Well, you know, I have this thing coming up, and I checked out your website, I really love it. And so they give you a call. So definitely plant those seeds. And also a website is hugely critical. That's one of the other biggest thing you can do when you start out.
One question, regarding the networking, how much value do you give word of mouth? Customers recommending you to other customers?
I think the best thing you can do is over-deliver, under-promise and over-deliver. In other words, if you do a headshot, you're just starting out, you do a great job, you deliver it quickly, and maybe you throw in an extra print. Stuff like that goes such a long way because that person will now tell other people, you did a great job. You know, this guy was so great to work with. You should definitely hire him. So word of mouth is good if you do a great job. If you have poor customer service, if you're late getting the prints, they needed them by Tuesday, but you really couldn't get to them until Wednesday, that is hugely detrimental. You will not only lose that client for the future, but they'll tell other people who might be looking for photographers. But networking is all about expanding awareness. A website's key because it's a way to kind of get your work out there and to create a presence. And really get a good designer. If you're not a good designer, hire someone. It's the best investment you can make. I used to get calls where people would, you know, get me on the phone and say, oh, they couldn't believe they got me on the phone. They saw my website and they just assumed that they'd have to go through like seven people to get to me. And really, that the website was just nice enough that it looked professional, that it just gave them this sense. And as my website developed and it got better looking, I started to get calls from better clients. And unfortunately, I think some people thought they couldn't afford me anymore, which might have been true. But it's such a visual representation. Obviously, you have to have good pictures, but make sure it's framed in a really nice website because you are judged on your website. You are not judged on your pictures, unfortunately. If you have a great-looking website, you can have decent pictures, and you'll probably get more calls. But if you have great pictures in a bad website, it's going to look haphazard. It's going to look like it's just kind of not really pulled together and not really quite professional. You know, the type's kind of weird and the colors are off. That's an uneasy feeling that you're portraying to a client before they've even picked up the phone. So make sure your website is in tip-top shape. And if you need to hire someone, it's definitely worth the investment.
Well, do you remember anything specifically interesting or funny or scaring or frightening that happened to you during any of your early customer shots?
Nothing scary. Not like rubbing up against an electric fence. To me, that's scary if you're in with the cows, but...
Well, it wasn't that bad. Yeah. It wasn't that bad.
I would have put in a sound effect there, some sort of, and you know, a big crackling sound and then just dead air for like 10 seconds. I would have concerned your listeners probably.
I was thinking about that in post-processing when I did that Black Forest cow shooting, but I thought it was funny as it was, and I played that to my girlfriend, and she couldn't stop laughing. She really loved it, so I left it as it was.
It was good as it was, actually. I had a camera lock up, my first digital SLR, which I used countless hours. It was right at the end of a portfolio shoot, and it was going great. The model was great. The rhythm was there. And then I was taking some pictures, some final pictures, and then the shutter just closed. I clicked to take a picture, and it never opened back up. And I could not figure out what was wrong. And this, you know, the model had driven from far away, and we had the studio already and everything. So luckily we had got enough pictures in the portfolio that we didn't have to. But I always thought, wow, what if it happened right at the beginning of the shoot? So it's always good to have a backup camera. You definitely want to have that backup just in case.
Do you want to tell the listeners what camera that was, that locked up?
That was the... who are your sponsors this week?
I don't have a sponsor.
Okay. Well, this was... Well, you know what? This camera is not... It's out of production. It was the Olympus 10D. I would love to say how much I love this camera, because this was, and a lot of listeners will probably warm up to this, is that that was the first digital SLR that came in at a price point that was affordable. And it was really kind of a paradigm shift where, you know, suddenly you could see through the lens, you could afford to buy these cameras. And I think the megapixels was probably 4 or something like that.
Which is generally good enough to take good pictures and to have them used in many applications.
Yeah, I think a lot of people currently get obsessed with megapixels, and you want to have good resolution, but we're beyond good resolution. I mean, even the point and shoots now are up to, you know, probably 5 or 7 megapixels, and you know, that's plenty. I mean, just for like print work and printing out 8x10s and even poster size. You know, a lot of it can be overkill. And I think just the higher numbers just sound more exciting. It's like, oh, I need to get this new one because it's, you know, an extra 2 megapixels. So
I've recently read of a photographer who does work for huge, large billboards, and he uses a 4-megapixel camera. I mean, you can do it. It always depends on what distance you look at those pictures from.
I have some... I can actually send you some of the files, but you'd have to see the billboards, because I have done billboards for these clubs downtown, and they were probably, I don't know, they were pretty huge. And that was, some of those were with the 4-megapixel. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend says megapickle, and I always pause because I think I'm going to say megapickle, but I say megapixel. Anyway, so yeah, I've done some billboards in that same, you know, 4 or 5, and it comes out great, you know, because it's really, first of all, you have the distance of looking at it from a slight distance, and you don't always need that much resolution.
And more pixels usually means that the signal noise ratio will get worse. So the smaller, the more pixels on the same chip means smaller pixels, and smaller pixels usually means higher noise levels, especially at high ISOs.
Exactly. And then you're also dealing with storage, and you know, where you could fit a lot on a card. Now you can only fit a certain amount on a card, especially if you shoot like raw. I mean, then it gets really into bigger file sizes. So, yeah, I would say, you know, an experiment for your listeners might be to shoot, to dial down the megapixels or the resolution on your current camera and see what you get. I think most people would be surprised that it looks pretty darn good and they could actually fit a lot more on their card. I think a lot of us just dial up to the highest setting and shoot from there, but you know, sometimes we don't always need that much.
Well, I sometimes do that. I mean, I have a 8-megapixel camera, and sometimes I find myself dialing that down to 6 or 5 megapixels just because it's enough for that type of a shot.
Exactly.
If I know where the image is going to end up in the end, and it's a shot that will definitely just end up on the web, sometimes even the lowest resolution that the camera will do can be enough.
All right, Chris, I have a question for you. What do you love to photograph more than anything?
Okay, I was afraid that you would ask some question like that, but what do I love taking pictures of most? To be honest, I don't think I have a preference. I find a lot of satisfaction in all types of photography. I did shots for websites where I did product shots with... One was for a table, and we flipped that table on its back and took pictures from weird angles and then turned the picture back around 180 degrees so it looked like it was hanging from the ceiling and things like that. And in the beginning, that I thought that would be a boring shot, but we made something out of it. When I took those pictures of lightning, it took me over an hour to and 120 pictures to get three good lightning bolts. To catch three good lightning bolts. But I felt the biggest satisfaction because I got them, because I took the opportunity and went for it and took the time. And I made that into a sound seeing tour, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I took plain, simple portraits. A friend actually asking me if I could take portraits of him for... I think he wanted to apply for a job or something, and did those, and it turned out to be a lot of fun.
Cool.
No real preference. I think I'm that sort of an all-rounder. Sometimes I wish I was more specialized, because I know that then in this area I would probably get much better. But in general, I feel real satisfaction being able to take pictures of many different things and deliver results that at least I think are good enough in most cases.
Interesting.
what's your area, your favorite area?
I like models, but models who can work it in front of the camera. A model who is it doesn't even have to be someone who's, you know, gorgeous, but someone who is comfy in front of the camera to kind of move and dance around and swing and, you know, just to really, I think that, you know, kind of the poetry and motion of the photographer coupled with a subject who is just really giving their all in front of the camera, I tend to get a lot more magical shots, just things you wouldn't expect that suddenly, you know, it's just a quick click and it's like, oh, that's a shot. That's really great. I don't like posing, so I like to always move the subject around and have them doing something or at least moving or twirling and getting some energy into the shot. But I love color too. And I like makeup, highly stylized stuff that not necessarily is, you know, normal hair and makeup and clothing you would wear, you know, going to the supermarket, but stuff that's just a little more amped up and a little more dramatic and high fashion. So I think that's, you know, really exciting to capture that stuff and to really make it look cool.
Well, and I must admit that I haven't done many of those model type shots before, so I might find that I really like that when I start doing it.
You should. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what it is. It's a creative collaboration. It's the model, and also if you have a good stylist, someone who does hair and makeup, what happens is you have a team working on something, and things come out of it that you wouldn't expect. if I were to go photograph a building down the street, I pretty much know what to expect. I'm going to walk down. I'm going to get some shots, some low angle to add some drama. I'm going to come back and, you know, they'll look good. I'll tweak them and sharpen them in Photoshop. But when I have a model or two models and I have a stylist and someone to do, you know, hair, makeup, and I'm experimenting with light, there's kind of a melting pot of a lot of different creative options, because the stylist might say, let's change her eyes. And the hair person might say, well, let me pin up the hair. And I'll say, yeah, that's good. Let me throw a yellow gel on the light, because that'll balance off the, you know, this color that she's wearing. So it's a creative collaboration that I really like. And I think I got that from filmmaking, which is, you know, really, and television too, where it takes a team to put these things on. I don't know. I just love that. I've seen a lot of things come out of shoots that I never would imagine or expect just from having several creative people in the room.
Cool. Very cool. Well, looking at the clock, I think this is going to be a very long, very, very, very large download for the listener. So I guess we better bring this to an end, to a smooth ending of some sort. So
a smooth ending, yes.
Yeah. Frank, thank you very much for being on the show. It was fun as usual and very informative. Really good.
Thank you. I think that what the listeners probably don't know is that we've become real good buddies and friends through this, and, yep. and doing our own podcasts and doing mine, Media Artist Secrets, and which is about, you know, business of being creative, and then doing yours, which is about actually being creative.
Yeah, and the listeners today just got a small glimpse of what you tell on your show, and yeah, I recommend everyone to go to Frank's website, mediaartist.com. It's really worth a listen.
Yes, and stay subscribed to Tips from the Top Floor.
As Adam Curry uses to say, stay subscribed.
Indeed. Well, thanks, Chris, for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Sure. Thanks for being here. Bye-bye. And that was Tips from the Top Floor, the Vacation Special Edition number 2. You won't talk about this, you won't talk about that, you won't. Check back next week for another great interview, and the show will continue as usual starting October again. Until then, happy shooting! Sunshine.